A few minutes later, Abigail and Zeus walked up to us. Zeus opened the truck door.
"What's going on?" he asked.
"We were just talking about our next step," Austin said. "Which is getting out of this lame country," Abigail said.
"We need to go to Lima and sink the Elgen's main boat," I said.
"What?"
Abigail said.
"You're planning to sink the Ampere?" Zeus said.
"That's the plan," I said.
"It's not my plan," Zeus said, shaking his head. "Maybe you've forgotten, but I don't do boats. I'm getting out of this death hole."
"The thing is," Abigail said, "it's not just the army who wants to kill us, it's the entire country. They've probably put our pictures on television."
"No television," Austin said. "There's no electricity."
"Whatever," Abigail said. "Then in the newspaper. And if you haven't noticed, we don't look like Peruvians. We stand out."
"She's right," Taylor said.
"Why do you think the Ampere will be in Lima?" Zeus asked. "It's in Europe."
"The voice," I replied. "He told us that Hatch is bringing the Elgen fleet to Peru."
Zeus shook his head. "I doubt it. Chairman Scema would never go for it. He likes Italy too much."
"There is no Chairman Scema anymore," I said.
"What do you mean?"
"Hatch has taken over the entire corporation."
"That's not good," Zeus said.
Abigail groaned.
"All the more reason to get out of this lousy country before our luck runs out."
"And then what?"
Austin said.
"Wait for the Elgen to grow stronger and come find us? We stand a much better chance of not being found if we stop throwing ourselves at them," Abigail said.
"She's got a point," McKenna said. "And worst case, we'll at least have a real life for a few years."
She frowned.
"I'm sorry, but I'm tired."
I exhaled slowly, then rested my head in my hand.
"Me too."
"We all are," Taylor said. "And sad."
I looked back over at Jack. Seeing him broke my heart. Taylor put her hand on my back.
"When do we leave?" Zeus asked.
"We better wait until morning," I said. "I don't think we should drive at night."
"Is there anything to eat?" Austin asked.
"There's food and water in the back of the other truck," McKenna said. "It looks like these guys were planning on sticking around."
Taylor said, "We'll get dinner for everyone." She turned to McKenna.
"Will you help me heat it?"
"Sure."
They both got out of the truck.
"I'll help,"
Austin said, climbing down after McKenna. Taylor leaned in and kissed my cheek.
"I'll see you in a minute."
The three of them left. When they were gone, Abigail sighed.
"I'm really worried about Jack."
I looked back over at him again. He was still in the same place, his head bowed.
"We probably shouldn't leave him alone," I said. "He said he wants to be alone," Zeus said.
"That doesn't mean he should be,"
Abigail replied. She took Zeus's hand.
"Let's go see him."
"I'll come with you," I said.
The three of us walked over to where Jack was sitting and sat down next to him. He glanced up at us, then looked back down. I had no idea what to say. Fortunately, Abigail was naturally gifted at comforting people. She put her hand on Jack's shoulder.
"I'm sorry I can't take away the kind of pain you're feeling."
"I need to feel the pain," Jack said. "It would be wrong not to."
We were all silent for a moment. Abigail said,
"You know, when we couldn't find you, Wade was so upset. He kept saying, 'We've got to find Jack.' He pushed us along. You meant that much to him."
Jack covered his eyes with his hand. None of us had ever seen him cry before. It looked so foreign, like Superman with a broken arm. After a minute, he looked up at us.
Wade had no one. His parents abandoned him. Every foster home he went to threw him out. His grandmother was a loser.
He put down his head.
He had you, Abigail said.
Lucky him,
Jack replied sarcastically.
He was lucky to have you, Abigail said.
Jack exploded.
Lucky? He'd still be alive if it wasn't for me.
Abigail didn't turn away. After a moment, she said,
When your home was burned down, you said, I made my choices. I'll live with them. Shouldn't you allow Wade the same? No one forced him to come. He made his choices.
Jack didn't answer. Abigail took his hand.
Everyone dies. You made Wade's life worth living.
Jack bowed his head again. Abigail wrapped her arms around him and held him. He began to shake. A minute later, Zeus said,
I'm sorry, man. Wade was a good guy. He really loved you.
Without looking up, Jack said,
I was a jerk to him. I was always on his case.
He knew you loved him. That's why he loved you so much, Abigail said.
All of us sat quietly for a moment. Then Zeus added,
So do we.
Zeus stood up and walked away. After another minute, I said, He's right, you know. Jack couldn't answer. He just broke down and wept. Chapter 23 Final Salute. That night, we ate a hot dinner of pork and bean burritos and some kind of soup with chicken claws in it. Everyone ate except for Jack and Ian, who claimed not to be hungry. A while after dinner, Jack and I put Wade's wrapped body in the back of the blue truck to keep it from animals. Then we all found a place to sleep in the other truck bed, or inside the trucks, except for Jack, who slept outside on the ground. The next morning, I woke to the sound of digging. Jack had found a shovel in the truck and was digging a grave. I walked over to him. He had washed the blood off his face and arms, but his shirt was stained. He was soaked in sweat, and he looked as if he hadn't slept at all. Need any help? He shook his head. You don't want to take him with us?
It doesn't matter where he's buried. No one in America cares.
I just looked down. After a few minutes, I said, We're planning on leaving around noon. We're going to take the trucks and drive to Cusco. I looked at Jack, then said, After we have a service for Wade. He looked up, then said,
Would you say something? I don't know how to. He respected you.
I'd be honored, I said. Shortly after Jack finished digging, Zeus and Jack laid Wade's wrapped body in the grave, and we all gathered around. McKenna and Austin had fashioned a small cross from tree branches, and Abigail and Taylor had gathered dozens of brightly colored jungle flowers, enough to completely cover the grave. I stood at the head of the grave next to the cross. It seemed as if even the jungle had quieted for my eulogy. To be honest, when I first met Wade, I didn't like him very much. I only knew him as a bully. In school, there's a lot said about bullies. We hear about what bad people they are. Adults act as if bullying only takes place in school, but adults bully one another all the time. Some married people bully each other. Some bosses bully their employees. Businesses bully businesses. Countries bully countries. It's like the no-bullying rule changes after you're an adult. Still, they tell us to hate bullies. But maybe that's the exact opposite of what we should do. Maybe if they were treated well, they wouldn't bully. Wade wasn't born a bully.
He was taught it by those who should have taken care of him. After he became my friend, he showed me what kind of person he really was. He was loyal and brave. He had the chance to go home, and the Elgin probably would have left him alone. But he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't leave his friends. And that makes him a hero. I know we're all going to miss him. I'm going to miss him. But most of all, Jack will miss him. I looked at Jack. His face was streaked with tears. Wade's last words were to Jack. He thanked him for being his friend, his only friend. Then he said he was sorry. But Wade had nothing to be sorry about. He showed his true self. He always wanted to be a warrior like Jack, and in the end, he was. I took a deep breath. That's all I have to say. Taylor sidled up to me and took my hand.
Thank you, Jack said.
Everyone stood around quietly to see what Jack would do. He looked down for a moment, then he saluted. After a few more minutes, Zeus began shoveling the dirt back into the grave. When he was done, Taylor, McKenna, and Abigail covered the mound with flowers. Chapter 24. An Ugly Mob. Zeus, Taylor, Ian, and I checked the guards to make sure they were secure. Their leader, the guard who had carried Jack and Taylor into the jungle, tried to negotiate with us.
Come on, mates. We can work something out.
We've seen how you work things out, I said.
I can get you money.
Zeus crouched down next to him.
How? By selling one of us? Do you think we're stupid?
The man said nothing. Zeus's eyes narrowed.
I remember you.
You were at the academy.
I was at the gate, he said. I used to protect you.
All of you. Zeus grinned. You protected me?
He laughed.
Delusions of grandeur.
The man turned away from him.
Look at me!
Zeus grabbed him by the hair and pulled his head back.
Your friend killed one of our friends!
He was acting on his own.
He wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for you!
Zeus held his hands up, and electricity sparked between his fingers.
The only reason I don't electrocute you right now is because Michael asked me not to. But give me a reason to change my mind.
The man went silent. Where's your money? I asked. It's in his back pocket, Ian said. Zeus rolled him over and took out his wallet.
Here,
he said, tossing it to Ian. How much is there? I asked. Ian rifled through the bills.
About 1,000 in Peruvian.
I crouched down next to the man. Does this road go all the way to Cusco? He didn't answer me.
There's an anthill over by that tree, Ian said. Let's drag him over there. The road goes to Pacatambo, he said.
What's that?
It's a small village.
Does the army know about this road?
They wouldn't be much of an army if they didn't.
But you felt safe enough to hide here.
They weren't expecting us.
He turned his head to look at me.
You don't really think you can escape, do you? They've plastered your pictures on newspapers and handbills everywhere. The whole country is looking for you.
Well, we'll just have to do our best to not let them find us, I said. Come on, guys.
Wait, you're not just going to leave me here like this?
No, I said. Ian, add another pair of handcuffs. And if he gives you any trouble, I looked at the guard, leave him on the anthill. We checked the other three guards for money, then added handcuffs as well. We ended up with more than 2,700 souls, which Austin said was more than $1,000. A half hour later, I approached Jack, who was sitting on the ground next to Wade's grave. "We're ready." He stood. He was no longer crying. His emotions had turned. His face was steely with anger. I handed him the truck keys. "We're in the blue truck. The guard told us that the road goes all the way through the jungle. We can make it to Cusco by night." He nodded, then walked past me to the truck. Taylor, Austin, McKenna, and I rode in the truck with Jack, while Zeus, Tessa, Abigail, and Ian rode in the other. The dirt road continued on for 10 miles, opening to an abandoned logging site, then carried on west for another 40 miles, until, by late afternoon, we emerged from the jungle into Pocartambo, a village nestled between the green slopes of two mountains. The ancient-looking town was bigger than I thought it would be. The buildings had weathered plaster exteriors with terracotta tile roofs, and the streets were crowded with people on foot, many dressed in bright Quechuan costumes with ponchos and bowler hats. As we entered the town, a herd of llamas crossing the main street stopped us.
"Llamas are so funny-looking," Taylor said.
"Technically," Austin said, "they are vicuñas."
"They look like llamas to me," Taylor said.
"Llama refers to the whole family of domesticated South American cameloids," Austin said. "Like, we call horses horses, but they might be quarter horses or Clydesdales or any other kind. Vicuñas are smaller than most other llamas, and their fur is more valued than even the alpaca. It's illegal to try to export them."
"I wasn't planning on bringing one home," Taylor said.
"You know, llamas are descended from the camel."
"How did camels get to South America?" McKenna asked.
"I'm glad you asked," Austin said.
"I'm not," Taylor mumbled.
I lay my head against the window and looked out. I was glad to hear Austin spouting off again. I wanted to think about anything except Wade. Somehow Austin's biology lesson made things seem normal, even though they weren't, and never would be again. After the herd had passed, we drove slowly around the town.
"Look," Taylor said, "a street market. Can we stop?"
"I don't think that's a good idea," I said.
"Maybe they have something to eat," Austin said. "I'm hungry."
"Me too," McKenna said, "and thirsty. Can we stop and get some water?"
"I have to use the bathroom," Taylor said.
"They don't have toilets," Austin said. "Just squatters."
"What's a squatter?" she asked.
"It's just a hole in the ground, and they probably won't have toilet paper."
"Lovely," Taylor said. "I should have gone in the jungle with McKenna."
"All right," I said, pointing to a dirt field at the end of the road. "Let's park over there." Jack pulled off the road into the vacant lot and put the truck in park. Zeus pulled the other truck up to my side and rolled down his window.
"What are we doing?" Zeus asked.
"We're stopping to get something to eat," I said. He looked back, then said,
"All right."
Austin and I opened the doors, and everyone climbed out except for Jack. Zeus parked the other truck in front of us, and everyone else got out. The place made me nervous. "We better not stay too long," I said. Abigail walked up to Jack.
"Are you coming?"
"No, I'll wait here."
"Can I get you anything?"
He shook his head.
"No."
Abigail touched his arm.
"I'll see if I can find some pastries or something."
The street market was swarming with people, and our presence did not go unnoticed. We were the only foreigners on the street, and the natives were not shy about staring at us, which made me very nervous. I held Taylor's hand as we walked through the square.
"I wish Idaho had street markets," she said.
She stopped to look at a colorful poncho, holding it up to her chest.
"How do I look?"
"Native,"
I said. There was a small mart with a refrigerator near the door.
"Hey, they've got Inca Kola," I said. "Want one?"
"Sure, Maybe they have a bathroom inside,
Taylor replied. The mart was narrow, no more than 10 feet wide, but 3 times as long. Colorful packages of snacks with Spanish writing hung on the walls. I lay our things on one of the small wood tables against the wall. I don't see a bathroom, I said. I wish Austin was here to translate for us.
Wait, I remember the word for bathroom.
She walked up to the dark-featured man at the counter.
Excuse me, do you have a baño?
I doubted he understood anything but the last word, but he pointed toward the back of the store.
El baño, sí.
2 years of high school Spanish just paid off, Taylor said, looking back at me.
See you in a second.
While she was gone, I bought 2 colas and some bottled water and brought them over to the table. The table was dirty, but there were napkins, so I wet one with a bottle of water and wiped it off. Taylor returned about 5 minutes later.
That was gross, she said. There were flies everywhere.
She sat down and I handed her a bottle of cola. It's warm, I said. She frowned.
Don't they have a refrigerator?
Yeah, just no power.
Why don't they have electricity?
I cocked my head. I think that's our fault.
Oh, right.
I took a swig of my tepid soda. So when did this thing with Austin and McKenna start?
I think it began back in Idaho, she said. When McKenna melted through her bands in the truck, Austin was all goo-goo-eyed.
He did always have a thing for Asian girls. Remember that night at Maddie's party, when he just stared at Angel until she freaked?
Yeah. Then he told her she was the most beautiful girl in the world.
Taylor nodded.
Maybe he's not as dumb with girls as we thought.
She took a drink of her cola.
Actually, I think it really started after we lost you in the Star Source plant. I freaked out and blamed Austin for leaving you behind. I said some pretty mean things.
McKenna stood up for him. Just then, 2 soldiers in camouflage ran past the grocery store.
Did you see that? I said.
Taylor turned back.
What?
Soldiers just ran by. We've got to go.
We've got to find the others, Taylor said.
We left our drinks and walked to the door. I looked for more soldiers, but didn't see any. Across the street from us, I could see Abigail, Zeus, and Tessa trying on hats. We hurried over to them. Tessa looked up at me from under the brim of a straw hat.
What's up? Soldiers, Taylor said.
Where?
Zeus asked. 2 just ran past us, I said. That way.
Toward the trucks, Zeus said. Let's get out of here.
Where's everyone else? I asked.
The last time I saw Austin and McKenna, they were at that table over there, Abigail said. By that fruit cart. They were buying ponchos.
And Ian?
He decided to hang back with Jack, Tessa said.
You guys head back, I said. Taylor and I will find Austin and McKenna. While they walked back up the road, Taylor and I headed back toward the fruit cart.
There they are, Taylor said, pointing. At that puppet show.
We ran down to them. They were both carrying bags with colorful ponchos and hats. I grabbed Austin's arm.
We've got to go.
Wait, Austin said. It's just about over. Now, Taylor said. We just saw soldiers.
As we hurried back up the street toward the trucks, we noticed a large crowd had gathered near the end of the market adjacent to the field where we had parked the trucks. Suddenly, Austin grabbed McKenna's arm and pulled her into a small bakery. He shouted to us,
Guys!
He frantically motioned for us to follow.
What?
I said, walking into the bakery.
That's not a crowd. It's a mob. I heard someone shout, Death to the American terrorists.
Just then the baker behind the counter pointed at us.
Terroristas!
Taylor rebooted him. The man put his hand up to his forehead. He looked confused and lost. He spotted us and said,
A la orden, amigos? Pastel de canela, por favor,
Austin said, pointing to a pastry.
Eso.
Muy bien,
he said, lifting out a bun sprinkled with cinnamon.
Hablas muy bien el español. Un sol, porfa.
Austin handed him a coin.
How can you think about eating? Taylor asked. It's a distraction, Austin said. For him or for you? Taylor said.
Ask him if there's a back way out, I said.
¿Hay una salida atrás?
Austin asked.
Sí, a través aquí.
Gracias,
Austin said. He turned to us.
There is.
Let's go.
The back door opened out into an unpaved alley. Fortunately, there was no one there except a beggar who had fallen asleep against a stucco wall.
This way, I said.
As we got to the top of the passage, our hearts froze.
You gotta be kidding me, Austin said.
In the dirt field, there were two army jeeps with mounted machine guns, a large transport truck, a police car, and a crowd of Peruvians who had surrounded the vehicles. Jack and Ian were nowhere to be seen.
Do you think they caught them? McKenna asked.
I'm betting that Ian saw them coming and they ran.
What do we do now? Taylor asked. They've surrounded the trucks.
They're no good to us now anyway, I said. We've been identified. Everyone will be looking for them.
Then how do we get out of here? Look over there, McKenna said.
To the south of the lot was a crowd of several hundred Peruvians. They had surrounded Zeus, Tessa, and Abigail.
This is bad, I said. This is going to be ugly, Austin said. It's a freaking lynch mob.
Except with Tessa next to him, Zeus could easily kill them all, I said.
That's all we need, Taylor said. A massacre by the American terrorists.
I have an idea, I said. Austin, we need your ponchos. He handed over the sacks. I gave one of the ponchos to Taylor. If we can get close enough to them, Taylor could reboot the whole crowd.
I can't reboot that many people, she said.
You can with Tessa's help, I said. That's why we need to get close. I pulled the hat on, lowering its brim to conceal my face. How do I look?
Native,
Taylor said, putting on her own hat. I turned to Austin.
We need a diversion. Blow something up, just not the big army truck.
Why not?
Because that's what we're taking out of here.
Got it, McKenna said.
Taylor took a deep breath.
Let's go.
Taylor and I shoved our way through the jeering crowd with our heads down as she rebooted everyone in our way. One man grabbed my arm, but I immediately pulsed and kept walking. When we got near the center, we saw rocks and fruit around Zeus and the girls. Zeus was bleeding, and three Peruvians were lying face down on the ground. There were machetes on the ground near two of them. The girls stood behind Zeus, who had his hands up, electricity sparking between them. The people didn't dare get any closer, so they had resorted to throwing things at them. Near the front, a man cocked his arm back to throw a brick. I shocked him, dropping him to the ground. I walked into the clearing with Taylor following behind me. Zeus held his hands out toward us.
Stop!
I kept walking.
I said stop!
Then he fired at me, which is what I wanted. The electricity filled my body with even more strength, something we'd need if Taylor couldn't reboot them all. When I didn't fall, Zeus looked panicked. When I was 10 feet from him, I tilted my hat up.
Need some help?
He groaned with relief.
Michael.
Tessa, enhance Taylor.
Got it, Tessa said.
I looked at Taylor.
Now.
Taylor took off her hat and concentrated. Suddenly the entire crowd silenced. A few of the older people collapsed to the ground.
Wow, Taylor said. I've never done that before.
Hurry, let's get out of here, I said. We walked in a single-file line with me in front, Zeus taking the back, and Tessa in the middle to enhance all of us.
Have you seen Jack and Ian?
I asked.
No, Abigail said. I'm hoping Ian's seen us.
Suddenly, there was a loud explosion near the market, and black smoke began to rise above the buildings. As I had hoped, it drew the crowd's attention away from the field.
What was that? Zeus asked.
McKenna and Austin, I said. Tessa, stay close to Taylor. Keep rebooting. We might as well have been invisible as we walked through the crowd. The townspeople just stood around us in a stupor, looking like they all had migraines. After the supercharge I got from Zeus, I was feeling pretty electric, and people's metal objects kept sticking to me, which I had to pluck off.
You've got a machete stuck to your back, Tessa said, pulling the knife off of me.
And three earrings. As we got near the army truck, Taylor rebooted the crowd standing around it. Then I walked to the driver's side of the truck and pulsed, knocking out the driver and passenger. Zeus and I pulled them out.
I'll drive, Zeus said.
There's Jack and Ian, McKenna said, pointing toward the east. They're running toward us.
Jack and Ian were at the far side of the field, running at a dead sprint in our direction.
They're being chased by soldiers, Abigail said.
There were at least a dozen soldiers behind them. Then one of them dropped to his knee and raised a gun.
Zeus! I shouted. I see it! Zeus said.
He reached out and fired a wide bolt, dropping the entire group like bowling pins. I began waving toward Ian and Jack, which was moot since Ian had already seen us. They reached us seconds later, panting and out of breath.
Thanks for the assist, Jack said to Zeus. Always my pleasure, Zeus said. Get in back.
Zeus and I jumped in the front seat, and Zeus started up the truck. Taylor, Abigail, and Tessa had already climbed into the back of the transport, and Taylor waved to Jack and Ian. I parted the screen that divided the cab from the back.
Ian, where are Austin and McKenna?
He looked around for a moment.
They're over there, he said, pointing. Where?
I asked.
Wait for it.
Just then, Austin and McKenna came running out of the bakery and back up the alley.
Zeus, they're over there, I said. Let's get them. Got it, he said.
He shoved the stick shift forward, and the truck sluggishly ground into gear, then lurched forward.
This thing's a whale, he said.
He turned the truck around as tightly as he could, then drove through a ditch, which tumbled everyone in back, and into the road. I hung out the passenger window waving Austin's poncho to get their attention. McKenna saw us first.
Get in back! I shouted to them.
Zeus stopped the truck, and Jack and Ian pulled them in. Taylor pounded on the metal side of the truck to signal us.
They're in! Go!
Which way? Zeus asked.
That way, I said, pointing to the town's only stoplight. Take the highway east to Cusco. We drove around the outside of the town, onto the highway. I kept waiting for someone to come after us, but no one did. As the town fell out of sight, Taylor stuck her head up into the cab.
You okay? She asked.
Never been better, I said.
Good,
she said, nodding.
Cute little town.
The one good thing about our brush with danger and narrow escape, other than that we did escape, was that it temporarily took our minds from the grief we were all carrying, though I'm not sure if trading fear for pain is such a bargain. From Pucartambo, we drove to the ancient Incan hill town of Pisac, but for obvious reasons, we didn't stop. From Pisac, it was only 35 more miles to Cusco, which was a pretty straight drive except that the bridge over the Urubamba River was washed out, and the temporary bridge allowed only one lane of traffic, so we had to wait a long time to cross. Taylor climbed up front with Zeus and me, while everyone else sat or slept in the back. No one got too comfortable. We were driving a stolen army truck, and we figured that it was only a matter of time before someone noticed. Ian sat looking back to keep watch. We passed several army vehicles going the opposite direction, but they didn't even acknowledge us. we reached the outskirts of Cusco after dark. Chapter 25. The Blue Door. The city of Cusco is the kind of place you see in travel magazines and on TV travel shows. Of course, Austin had to tell us all he knew about the city. Cusco is not only the ancient capital of the Incan Empire, but it's the official tourist city of Peru, and it attracts more than 2 million visitors a year. The original city was built in the shape of a puma, or mountain lion, which, to the Incans, was a sacred animal. When the Spanish explorer Pizarro arrived in Peru with his soldiers, the Incan king Atahualpa tried to run him out, but the king was captured by the Spanish conquistadors. For his release, Pizarro demanded that the Incans fill a large room with gold. The Incans paid the ransom, but Pizarro just took their gold, then executed the king anyway. That's where the saying, a king's ransom, came from. The Inca Atahualpa was the last great Incan emperor, and 40 years after his death, the great Incan Empire came to an end. The Spanish tore down the Incan palace and built a cathedral on top of it. Austin's Cusco trivia went on for about 20 minutes. With the exception of McKenna's occasional response, no one else said a thing, and eventually even Austin got tired of hearing himself. As we drove toward the city, Ian and Taylor changed places, and Ian became our GPS, guiding us to the town square, the Plaza de Armas. As Austin had said, Cusco was a major tourist attraction, and the traffic slowed as the area was crowded with tourists and the people who profit from them. Zeus parked the army truck behind the Cathedral of Santo Domingo, and we all got out, looking around in awe. The cobblestone-paved square was large and beautifully decorated in the architecture of the Spanish Renaissance. Outside of history books, I had never seen anything like it. It seemed to me that everyone was looking at us, which made me nervous, but wasn't surprising. We hadn't bathed in weeks, and our clothes were ridiculously dirty. Only Jack, whose clothes were stained with blood, had changed shirts and was wearing an El Gen Guards undershirt. We split up into smaller groups to avoid drawing any more attention to ourselves, arranging to meet in 1 hour at the large fountain in the center of the plaza. Then Taylor, Austin, McKenna, and I set out in search of the Hostel El Triunfo. Finding the place wasn't as easy as I thought it would be. All Jaime had told us about the hostel's location was that it was near the town square. The square was considerably larger than I had imagined, and there were dozens of side streets and tiny alleyways leading off of it. Finally, Austin asked a shopkeeper where we could find the place, and he pointed us in the general direction. Taylor and I started off for it, while Austin and McKenna fell back, following us at a distance. The hostel wasn't especially notable, and Taylor and I walked past it twice before she spotted a small plastic sign hanging near the hostel's splintered wood front door. We stepped inside, quickly shutting the door behind us. The tiny lobby was dark and austere, lit only with candles. At the back of the room, standing behind a small counter, was an old Peruvian man with silver hair and bushy gray eyebrows as thick as caterpillars. Next to him was a young woman dressed in modern clothing. She looked close to our age, perhaps just a year or two older. The man looked at us suspiciously. I walked up to the counter. "Do you speak English?" I asked.
"Sí, señor. Un poco."
"We would like a room for the night." The man's dark eyes darted back and forth nervously.
"I am sorry, but we have no room. It is the tourist season."
Taylor glanced at me.
"I'm a friend of Jaime," I whispered.
The young woman glanced at the man. The man said,
"Who?"
"Jaime," I repeated.
He just looked at me. I suddenly wondered if we had come to the wrong place. "Is this the Hostel El Triunfo?"
"Sí."
You don't know Jaime?
The man laughed.
I have many amigos named Jaime. What is his last name?
I didn't know Jaime's last name. I looked at Taylor, but she shrugged.
We don't know.
He must not be much of a friend. I am sorry, but there are other hotels nearby. Perhaps they have a vacancy.
I was speechless, unsure of what to do. The man raised his massive eyebrows, as if inviting us to leave.
Does you need anything else?
No, I said. Thank you. We'll keep looking.
Taylor and I walked back out into the bustling alley. I sat down on the sidewalk, and Taylor sat next to me.
What now? She asked.
I still have the radio. I'll call Jaime. I froze.
No. What?
I left the radio in the truck. That's no big deal, she said. It's not too far.
No, not in this truck. In the pickup truck.
Back in Pacartambo? I groaned.
I screwed up.
We weren't planning on being attacked, she said.
I was sloppy, I said. We should always plan on being attacked. I was supposed to destroy the radio if we were caught. And now they have it. And we have no way to contact Jaime.
Taylor looked worried.
Without Jaime, how do we get home?
I shrugged. I have no idea. She looked scared.
But he knows we're here, right?
He said to meet him at Hostel El Triunfo, but apparently he was mistaken. Just then, someone said,
Amigo.
I looked up. The elderly man from the hostel was standing across the alley. He walked up to us.
You are Michael?
Yes, I said.
Excuse me, but my granddaughter talks too much. I could not risk her recognizing you. All of Peru is looking for you. Even in Cusco, where there are many Americans, it is dangerous for you. They have put your friend's pictures in the newspapers and on posters everywhere. You and your friends must get off the street. Quickly.
He handed me a brass key.
This is a key to a room in the back of the hostel. You may enter it through that door, so no one will see you.
He pointed to a blue metal door set in the white stucco wall.
You must hide in there until Jaime arrives.
You've spoken to Jaime?
Yesterday, he said. He told me to watch for you. He will be happy to know that you have made it here.
I was relieved to hear that Jaime was safe.
Until he comes, you and your friends must stay inside. I will bring extra blankets and pillows and some water and food.
I need to find my friends, I said. I put the key in my pocket. Thank you.
Thank you for what you are doing, he said. You are most brave.
We walked down to where Austin and McKenna were standing near the street corner.
Any luck? Austin asked.
We found it, I said. You guys go with Taylor back to the room. I'll round up everyone else.
We can help,
Austin said. No, they have pictures of you, but not me. We'll check out the room, Taylor said. Then I'll wait for everyone at the blue door. See you in a minute, I said. I handed Taylor the key, then walked back down past the hostel to the plaza, which even at the late hour was bustling with humanity. Apparently parts of Cusco still had electricity, as light emanated from many of the shops and restaurants, and the plaza itself was flooded with golden light. A Peruvian street band was playing near the fountain, filling the air with a carnival ambiance. There were tourists everywhere, laughing, buying trinkets, and drinking. Some of them were dancing. I envied them. I wanted to have fun, too. Under different circumstances, I would have. I found Zeus, Ian, Tessa, and Abigail sitting on the ledge of the fountain, eating ice cream. The fountain was half as wide as Mitchell's swimming pool, with a large bowl held up by three mermen who were blowing shell horns with water coming out. "Want some ice cream?" Tessa asked as I approached. "I'm okay," I said. "We found our contact. We've got to go."
"I don't want to go in yet," Abigail said. "It's fun out here."
"It's a beautiful night," Tessa said.
"The man at the hostel said it isn't safe for us. He said that they've shown your pictures in the newspaper."
"Great, we're famous," Zeus said.
"Infamous," Tessa corrected.
"It's just like I said," Abigail said.
Zeus stood.
"Let's go."
He turned to me.
"Where's this place?"
I gestured with my head. "Walk up that alley about 100 feet. On your right side, you'll come to a blue metal door. Taylor will be waiting for you."
"I see it," Ian said.
"Let's go."
"We escaped, and I still feel like a prisoner," Abigail said, turning away from me.
"Does anyone know where Jack is?" I asked. "He went into the cathedral," Ian said. "I can get him." "That's okay, I will. They didn't show my picture."
"I'll go with you,"
Tessa said. I hesitated. "You probably shouldn't."
"They don't have my picture either," she said firmly. "I'm just another tourist. You'll look less suspicious with me."
"All right," I said. "I'll see you guys at the room." Zeus, Ian, and Abigail walked off, leaving Tessa and me alone. As Tessa and I walked from the fountain, she took my hand.
"We should hold hands. We'll look less like terrorists."
"All right," I said, feeling a little uncomfortable. She noticed my apprehension and let go of my hand. She was quiet a moment, then said,
"Ever since we rescued your friends, you've hardly spoken to me. What's the deal? Aren't we friends anymore?"
"It's not that. I've had a lot on my mind."
"You mean you have a lot of Taylor on your mind?"
"She's my girlfriend."
"Does that mean we can't be friends anymore?"
I stopped. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to ignore you. There's just a lot going on."
"I know," she said. "I'm not trying to bust your chops."
She stopped and looked into my eyes.
"It's just, we got pretty close in the jungle. I don't think we should just throw it away."
I didn't know what to say. "I'm sorry." She smiled sadly at me, then cocked her head toward the cathedral.
"Come on, let's get Jack."
As we neared the cathedral, I asked, "What's the deal with you and Zeus?" She looked at me with a pained expression.
"You really want to open that door?"
"Only if you want to talk about it."
"He was my boyfriend for like 3 years. It was great. Then when I left for Peru, I didn't hear from him once. It was like, I love you, then who are you? I was pretty hurt."
"Have you talked to him about it?"
"I tried. He just had a lot of excuses, and now he has a thing for Abigail."
"He told you that?"
"He didn't have to," Tessa said.
She sighed.
"I'm going to have to find someone less electric."
The Cathedral of Santo Domingo was less than 100 yards from the fountain, and the building towered above the plaza like a great stone fortress. Even though it was late, the doors to the cathedral were open, and locals and groups of tourists were walking in to sightsee or worship. I had never been inside a cathedral before, and I was astonished at the intricate architecture and artwork.
"This is amazing," I said.
"You should see St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City," Tessa said. "It makes this place look like a Chuck E. Cheese's."
"You're jaded," I said.
"All of Hatch's kids are jaded," she replied.
Near the center of the chapel was a beautiful painting of the Last Supper. I stopped to look at it. After a moment, Tessa rolled her eyes.
"Come on, tourist," she said, pulling my hand. "We're looking for Jack, not sightseeing."
We had practically walked through the entire cathedral before we found him. He was kneeling with his head bowed before a table of lit candles. We watched him for a few minutes until Tessa, who was growing impatient, whispered to him,
"Jack!"
He looked up at us. "Sorry to disturb you," I said.
"It's okay," he said, standing.
I glanced at the table in front of him. "What are you doing?"
"I lit a candle for Wade," he said.
"I didn't know you were religious," I said.
"I'm not," he replied.
He walked toward me.
"Did you find the place?"
"Yes, the owner said we should get off the street. The government has shown our pictures all over the media, and he's afraid someone might recognize us."
"I figured as much," Jack said.
As we walked out of the cathedral, I noticed 5 police cars were now parked on the opposite side of the square.
"Those weren't there before," I said.
"What do you think's going on?"
Tessa asked. Jack lowered his head slightly.
"They must have found the truck," he said.
"If they did," I said, "then they know we're here." As I looked around the square, I saw police standing at every exit and alley. They were everywhere.
"What do we do?"
Tessa asked. "We act like tourists," I said. "Jack, stay a little behind us. We'll walk right past them." As we neared the alley, we could see that the police officers were all carrying pieces of paper. One of them stared at Tessa and me, then looked back down at the paper, then back up again.
"They have pictures," Tessa said.
"I'm in trouble," Jack said.
"Don't run," I said. "Not yet." The same officer who had dismissed us looked at Jack, then down at the paper again, then back up. His expression changed. He said something to another officer, then both officers approached Jack. They had grave expressions on their faces, and their hands were on their guns.
"Señor, may I see your passport?" one of them said.
Then 2 other police officers stepped up behind him.
I left it at the hotel," Jack said.
The officer said something in Spanish to the other police, then said,
"Please show me some ID."
"I don't have my wallet," Jack said.
The man just stared into Jack's face.
"You have no identification?"
"He got pickpocketed," I said, turning back. "This afternoon." The man glanced over at me, then back at Jack. Then a 5th officer walked up to us. He was holding an Uzi machine gun. Even though I fought it, I was twitching like crazy, which I'm sure didn't help our cause.
"Are you together?" he asked Tessa.
"Yes, sir," she said.
She moved closer to me, and I put my arm around her.
"You are Americans," he said.
I couldn't tell if he meant it as a statement or a question.
"Yes, sir," I said.
Jack and I glanced at each other. 2 of the officers moved their hands toward their guns. I was about to pulse when the officer in front of us suddenly froze. He just stood there, as if he were having a stroke or something. Then he looked up and turned to his partner and said something in Spanish that, from what I could tell, had nothing to do with us. The policeman with the Uzi turned and looked at a woman crossing the street. It was as if they had suddenly forgotten we were even there. I recognized Taylor's work. I gestured with my head to Jack. "Time to go," I said. We walked away. About 20 feet from where we stopped, Taylor and Ian stepped out from a leather goods shop, falling in a few steps behind us.
"That was close," Taylor said.
She was looking at my arm around Tessa. I quickly dropped it to my side. "They recognized Jack," I said.
"I think they found the truck," Jack said.
"They did," Ian said. "I saw them from the hostel." Ian stepped ahead of us and pushed open the hostel's blue door, which led into a small dark courtyard with a picnic table and umbrella. The space was walled in with a brick and stucco wall. The building's surface was terracotta, and there were several hanging pots of red flowers. Three cats lounged on a wrought iron table.
"It's over here," Ian said, stopping to wave us on. "There's a stairway around back."
We turned the corner and climbed a rickety, splintered wooden stairway to an upstairs room. As we climbed the stairs, I reached for Taylor's hand, but she ignored me. Jack opened the door, and we all hurried in. Ian locked the door behind us. The room was lit by a single bare light bulb. There was no air conditioning, and even though it was well past sunset, the heat in the room was stifling. The room was small for so many people. There were two bunk beds and a pile of blankets and pillows. Zeus and Abigail were sitting on one bed.
"Not exactly the Four Seasons," Tessa said.
"Perhaps you prefer prison," Taylor said coldly.
Tessa looked at her and frowned.
"Just saying, sweetheart, no need to get testy."
They glared at each other, filling the room with an uncomfortable tension. Then Taylor turned away. I put my hand on her shoulder, and she shrugged it off. I pulled her aside.
"What's up?"
"We're being hunted," she said angrily.
"Yeah, I know that. What's going on with us?"
"You tell me. You find something new in the jungle?"
She turned away from me.
"Taylor."
As I stood there wondering what to do, there was a knock at the door. We all froze except for Ian.
"It's the hostel man," he said. "He's bringing something."
Jack opened the door.
"Buenas noches," the man said,
pushing his way in. He was carrying two large canvas bags. He set them down on the floor, then shut the door behind himself.
"I brought you some food and water. I must warn you, the police are going door to door checking buildings," he said. "You must not come out until I tell you it is safe. I will do what I can to keep them away. I have locked the blue door."
"Thank you," I said. "We'll stay inside."
"Good," he said. "I must go back to the front before they arrive. One more thing. I have spoken with Jaime. He will be here early tomorrow morning to get you."
He opened the door.
"I will pray to the Virgin Mary for your safety."
He walked out, and Jack locked the door behind him. The room was quiet.
"What's the plan if they come?" Zeus asked.
"Ian will see them long before they get here," I said. "Taylor can reboot them." I looked at Ian.
"If we have to run, what's behind the back fence?"
"It looks like the back of a restaurant. It leads to a bunch of other streets. I think we could lose them."
"Can you see any vehicles?"
"There's a parking lot two blocks up. There are a few vans big enough to carry us all."
"Any with keys?"
"No worries," Jack said. "I can hotwire anything here."
"Okay," I said. "As a last resort, we blow our way out of here, climb over the fence, then follow Ian to the parking lot. Jack hotwires a van, and we drive to Lima."
"What if we get separated?" Abigail asked.
"We don't," I said. "We stick together."
I looked around the room. The fatigue of it all was getting to everyone.
"Got it?"
No one spoke.
"All right. Let's try to get some rest."
In spite of what I'd said, no one slept, especially me. Watching Taylor fume was agonizing. An hour later, Ian said,
"Two policemen just checked the blue door. Now they're going into the front door of the hostel."
Everyone was tense. After a moment, McKenna said,
"Tell us what's going on."
"They're talking to the old man. He's just talking. He's acting scared."
A minute later, he said,
"He's taping a picture of us up on the wall. The police are leaving."
I breathed out in relief. Ian turned to us.
"The man can act."
Around 1 in the morning, Ian came over and sat next to me. I think they've given up,